to Central Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Thousands gathered at Point State Park over the weekend to witness the arrival and docking of the largest depiction of a rubber duck this country has ever seen. If you were at the point and found yourself wondering where this popular bathtub toy came from, Joe Woese, executive director of the Toonzeum, has keen insights to share about the origins of the rubber duck. He's celebrating popular cartoon quackers through history with his new exhibit titled Duck. He's here to share some interesting duck tales and talk about where Ernie's favorite floaty friend comes from. Joe Woese, welcome back to Essential Pittsburgh.
Always a pleasure to be here.
Let's start with the origin of the rubber duck. How far back does this toy go?
Well, it goes back to the mid-1800s. You have two things that have to sort of parallel each other, bath time and toys. So you really have to think about the origin of baths before you can get to the origins of rubber ducks in many ways. So you have the idea of taking baths was not really that popular an idea.
Yeah, I guess centuries ago, they weren't doing it every night.
No, they certainly weren't. And by the time you get to 1800s, we have the rise of factories. And so you realize you got to take a bath before Sunday morning to go to church. So Saturday night baths become very popular. Bathtubs are still considered a luxury item. But in those mid-1800s, the manufacturers of pig troughs begin to realize, aha, we have another purpose we can encourage here. And in the catalogs, it would literally say pig trough or bathtub. You could use them for either or. So you had Saturday nights became the night to take a bath. But, if you had these large families, it went in order of age. So dad got to take his bath first, and then, big brother, and then little brother, till you get down to the littlest ones who got to go into that dirty, filthy, disgusting water that the whole family has used. So you need a way to get them into the tub. Well, the tub suddenly becomes playtime. So you have that now where all this has come together, where you got to get the kids into tubs. How do you do that? Well, you need toys. So they start playing around with these ideas. Unfortunately, you do have a big problem. Most toys sink. They fall right to the bottom of the tub. So you start to now look at where did this idea of rubber toys come from? Well, I mean, they can actually trace rubber toys all the way back to Christopher Columbus's time when he saw natives actually using the gum from a tree. They would roll it up into a ball and turn it into a bouncing ball. Now, that's not all that useful until you get to Goodyear and he comes up with vulcanized rubber. So this is the important part. Vulcanized rubber still sinks. But he comes up with something called blow molding so that he realizes he can blow air into this rubber and make it hollow. So now it's hollow. It floats. So the next step was the rubber duck. You had this sort of floatable rubber that you could actually put into a tub, and they start playing with these ideas, and that's where you get to sort of the age-old question asked by Chico Marx, why a duck?
And did it squeak when you squeezed it?
Well, that was added just a little bit later by Lucius Porter. He came up with this idea of he realized you squeeze this duck, air was coming out of it, so it would be very easy to put a whistle or small reed into it so it would squeak. So all these things, all these different areas are coming together into this the birth of the rubber duck. Unfortunately, that's where it gets a little bit murky, just like that water in the tub, is that there were so many different people involved in this that the person who created the rubber duck is sort of lost to us to history. So we don't know that specific person who created the duck. All we do know is you had rubber toys, so the thing that made the most sense to float in the water would be a toy duck.
Your current exhibit at the Toonzeum features various celebrity ducks through cartoon history. I think Daffy and Donald are probably the most familiar. Who are some of the notable celebrity ducks you've highlighted?
Well, Baby Huey.
I think
there's probably a few back there. Remember, Baby Huey is a great
The old Harvey
duck.
Comics.
Yeah, the old Harvey comics. And then you sort of start to get into the denizens of Duckburg. There's a lot of those. You've got, of course, Donald and his family, Huey, Dewey, and Louie, his nephews. And then you have from the 1990s, Darkwing Duck. Oh, a great character, Darkwing Duck. I am the terror that flaps in the night based on the shadow. So it was a fantastic character. And then you have probably my absolute favorite, Scrooge McDuck. Now, Scrooge McDuck created by the cartoonist Carl Barks. But what a lot of people don't realize is he was based on Andrew Carnegie. So he's sort of basically he's this character, this Scottish character with this this great voice that was, by the way, voiced by the same person who was with Mr. Ed, the owner of Mr. Ed, whose name just escaped me. But
he did a good. He was also in The Time Machine.
Yes,
and I can't think of the actor's name either. But I can figure it out while we're talking.
Look that up.
I will.
But Scrooge McDuck. And so you have this sort of very, very wealthy duck who is also, according to Forbes magazine, the most wealthy fictional character. Actually has more wealth than Tony Stark and Bruce Wayne combined. So Scrooge McDuck, based on Andrew Carnegie. And then what I found most fascinating is I started sitting down and watching DuckTales, this great show, again, from the 1990s, early 1990s. Wonderful thing. And there's one episode where they show a map of where Duckburg is located. And if you were to overlay that map over the United States, Duckburg is, in fact, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. So, again, you have all these exciting parallels that happen for these ducks in Pittsburgh. So it's a great connection.
Alan Young, by the way.
Alan Young, yes.
Alan Young,
yes,
the actor who played Mr. Ed's owner, who I first heard his Scottish accent again in that movie, The Time Machine.
Yes.
George Pal, 1960 Technicolor extravaganza. So you've brought it full circle because that movie was just on the other night on TCM.
Yeah.
What can you say about the personalities of cartoon ducks? Do you think that they reflect the temperament of real ducks?
You know, it has to do more with the sound that ducks make. That sort of
the
snapping and just
Donald just came in here.
But you hear that quacking sound, and it sounds like when you get it rapidly going together, it has sort of this angry tone to it.
Do that again.
So you have sort of this irascibility that they have, this sort of temperament of a little bit of attitude. In cartoons, they're always, the two big ones, Daffy and Donald, are in the shadow of these, iconic characters of Bugs Bunny and Mickey Mouse. So they're constantly striving to prove they deserve the limelight. And I think that comes out in both their personalities too. And I think that's part of the irritability they have. So ducks make great cartoon characters because they have this great personality. Just looking at a duck, it's such a funny animal. They waddle along, and every now and then they let loose with one of those quacks.
So Walt Disney was on to something, because I think he's the guy who first animated a duck, is he not?
Yeah, he's the first really mainstream animated character. People were animating ducks, but they weren't anthropomorphic. They were just sort of these little characters waddling along in the background. Walt's the first one to really come along and say, I think there's something to these ducks. And he made this unintelligible quacking duck in the wise little hand of Donald the Duck, who comes forth and then becomes really one of Walt's most popular characters and still is to this very day.
It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. Our guest is Joe Woese, executive director of the Toonzeum, as we discuss the giant rubber duck that is floating through Pittsburgh and its predecessors over the years. Now, of course, duck rhymes with buck, which is what enterprising folks like yourself are trying to make while the giant duck is floating around Pittsburgh. But you are involved in a dispute over what can and who can capitalize on the duck's image. Can you explain what's going on here?
Well, what happened was we had created some T-shirts. Of a little rubber duck on a shirt that said Quackinat, capitalizing on sort of Pittsburgh's unique language. And it was a very simple little thing, and we figured it'd be a good way to raise some money for the Toonzeum. And unfortunately, the Cultural Trust at the time did not react too well to it, sort of defending the artist, this idea that, well, we own this concept of ducks coming to Pittsburgh, and so that would extend to any merchandise involving ducks. And, of course, my argument being, it's a duck. Nobody can own a duck. So it quickly went viral. And I do think now we're in a situation where cooler heads, unlike ducks, cooler heads have prevailed, and the artist has said publicly that no one can own ducks.
The artist being the Dutch artist Florentine Hoffman, who created the giant rubber duck.
Now, however, he did say if you're doing a 30-foot duck, he owns those.
Right. So as far as you're concerned, what is this really about? Freedom of speech? Freedom of expression?
I think ultimately it's about a big rubber duck. this is what sort of happened, is this odd thing of how we have suddenly taken something that's really meant to just, you know, bring us joy and laughter really more than anything else. And I think we've added this layer unintentionally of sort of this pretentiousness of and I've been very careful because I do know this for me was an issue of freedom of speech and the, you know, ability to express myself and also, you know, free commerce, free enterprise. But at the same time, I have to keep in my back of my mind, this is about a duck. This is a really silly issue. And I think that's all right, because I think that sort of humor coming to it helps alleviate what could have been a very, very tense situation.
And you had said that you were concerned about the toll this could take on your and the Toonzeum's relationship with the Pittsburgh Cultural Trust. Just for clarification, what is the relationship that the Toonzeum has with the Trust?
You know, that's a very interesting question. And in reality, we collaborate with the Trust. We are in the cultural district. However, we do not receive any funding from them. We are not a part of the Trust. We are, in fact, probably the only organization in downtown, the arts organization in downtown Pittsburgh that is truly completely independent of the Trust. We don't rent off of them. We don't receive funding. We're not managed by them. All the other galleries are either run or rented by them. So I think that was part of the issue for me was this ability for us to continue to maintain that independent voice. Because I think that is important. We're dealing with cartoons. Cartoons need to be able to speak out or quack loudly.
How sad will you be when the rubber duck has to leave Pittsburgh? It's going to be here through the late October or mid to late October. I think the 20th is the last
day. I personally will be a little bit heartbroken. I absolutely love this duck. I'm glad to see it here. And that's, you know, one thing I have to commend the Trust really on bringing this duck here. I think it is a remarkable achievement, and I realize the commitment they've made to do it, and I think it's fantastic for the community. And I think, well, I know I'm going to miss that big yellow duck.
And what do you think of the way people have reacted to it since it arrived?
I've actually been really surprised.
How so?
Well, this also comes back to sort of the idea of what we do with cartoon museums. In the United States, there's only two museums dedicated exclusively to cartoon art. But in Asia, there are hundreds. In Europe, there are hundreds. So this appreciation they have for kitschy, campy, cool stuff in Europe and Asia has always been there. In Japan, they have giant robots all over the place, and it's great. The art of scale is greatly appreciated there. Here in the United States, it's not as mainstream. It's not as popular. So I have been surprised at the reaction, and I think it's a hopeful sign that we have a sense of humor about our art, and I think it's about time.
How long will people have a chance to catch the duck exhibit at the Toonzeum?
The duck exhibit will run also through October 20th.
Joe Woese is executive director of the Toonzeum. Thanks for joining us. You quack me up, man.
Oh, thank you. I didn't duck any questions either.
Coming up, Pittsburgh Post-Gazette sports writer emeritus Bob Dvorak looks at what postseason baseball means for Pittsburgh. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.
Rubber ducky, joy of joints. When I squeeze you, you make noise. Rubber ducky, you're my very best friend. It's true.